man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? It's your host, Ify Wadi Way, in the studio with my friends. So why don't I just go ahead and introduce you to them. First off, you know him. You love him. The Christmas Zaddy himself. We're almost there. Alonzo Duralde, what's good?
That's actually kind of what what's good is. We are now in September, which means we have entered the burr months, as people like to call them now. September, October, November, December. And just a reminder that we're in that final third of the year where, depending on where you live, maybe the leaves are turning color. But soon, like, Halloween candy is on the shelves. Thanksgiving is just beyond that. And just beyond that is... The big Megillah of them all is Christmas. And so, you know, I think it's just, it's a nice way to sort of shift into this part of the year, kind of feeling like there's some good stuff ahead. And frankly, if there was ever a year where you needed to shift to some good stuff, it's 2020. So yeah, the burr months. I'm leaning into them this year.
I've never heard that phrase.
I like it. I know.
You don't follow enough Christmas all year podcasts.
No, I have. You know, I have an exclusivity with you. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. We can't cheat on Alonzo.
Yeah.
But yeah. That other voice you hear, you also know her. You also love her. It's the queen of the Midwest. It's Drea Clark.
Yes. Did you just say the queen of the Midwest?
Well, yes, I did.
Oh, my God. I shouldn't want that so badly, but I want it.
Miss Butter Sculpture.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, that is appropriate. Yeah. What's good with me is, so we were speaking before we started about the idea of cribbing, which I call nesting.
Yes.
Because I am a child-free woman, but man, do I love to build a nest. And I feel like I'm building a literal one because now that, you know, my air conditioner is in my bedroom. I prefer to work from my bed. You guys, I fully purchased, you may be able to see because we're over Zoom, this huge pillow that in the 90s was called a husband pillow.
Oh, yes.
And
oh.
Like everyone had one in the dorms and it has like arms on the side of it. It is the best thing I've ever gotten for this week anyway. It came with a detachable second pillow that you can put behind your neck or use as lumbar support. Ooh. You guys, I like crawl into this. I set up my laptop. I turn on the air conditioner. And I mean, you know what I feel like? A real queen of the Midwest.
I want you to go full Swoosie Kurtz in True Stories.
Oh, my God.
Be in bed constantly. Just have life come to you.
I am sadly so close to that. But so that's good. If you make it an aim rather than a point of dejection, then, you know, it's just a better spin.
Then you win.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what's good with me. My... not a husband pillow. Hey, Ify.
No.
I bet you have somebody else to ask.
Yeah, yeah, we have someone else, you know? This person is a writer. They are a podcast producer. They are the host of The Dark Weeb. It is my good friend, member of the Bushy Bros, member of the Black Weeb Coalition, member of the Black Gundam Pilots Association, Cody Ziegler. What's
thank
good?
You, King. Thank you for having me, King.
Thank you so much. King. I'm glad that you know.
Yeah, I'm glad that you had the honor. Let me honor you by honoring me.
I know. I love the honor that we bouncing back before. You know, this is a tennis match of honor between two brothers.
We're volleying back and forth. Yeah. Things are good. Things are actually great for me. As we were saying before we started recording, it was previously hot as hell in LA, and it's going to be hot as hell again. And I didn't have AC for like three of those weeks. Wow, I really had to count those down. For three of those weeks.
It felt like five. It was only three. Yeah.
It's like wind chill, but in reverse.
It was consecutively, anyone who followed me on Twitter saw that it was consecutively between 90 and 93 degrees in my apartment at night. So like you could tell how bad it was in the day. And I finally got an R2-D2 unit, a portable unit that works in my room, and I have been thriving. I have never known such peace. It literally went from me being angry and cranky all day to like I got it and installed it in. And then the next day I was just like walking around my house, like whistling and like happy, like just like smiling ear to ear as I walked to the refrigerator to get some orange juice. It was complete night and day, complete black and white. So right now I'm thriving, King.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear it. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that AC turned you into Andy Griffith, you know?
Truly, man. Yeah. Truly. I felt like I had been popping Lexapro or something. I've never been that happy. don't know what was going on.
Oh, wow. We're back. Oh.
Hey, Iffy, I'm wondering, yep, other than the fact that I'm thrilled that you two have found each other in this crazy world and all of your shared interests.
But this is an hour-long show. Just
what's good with you?
What's good with me is, you know, the Twitch portion of Super Punch is going through some changes, so they had to pick up some of the equipment here. Because I've had, besides the equipment I have set up, I had all this extra equipment that were just in my dining area. And so I just kind of was like, all right, that's just like the, you know how every house has the chair. The dining area became the chair, and I was kind of sad about it. But just in time, they moved all the stuff and there's so much space there. I'm putting like a little coffee bar there. And,
oh, nice.
My friend Pat, who was picking up all the stuff, gave me a katana because it was sitting in his, in his trunk. And I was like, oh snap, you have a katana? He was like, yeah, my friend had to get rid of a bunch of stuff. Do you want it? And I was like, yes, I will never say no to a free katana. So so now, you know, I get to play with it.
I think Mark
Naomi
Twain said that originally.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. I definitely saw that like inscribed in oh, some sort 100%. Of statue. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm playing with it now, and then when Naomi comes, I have to put it high.
Hide it away. Yeah.
Yeah. Hide it away. Put it high so she can't touch it. And then when she's 18, she will defeat me with it, and that's when she truly becomes an adult.
So yeah, she can't grab. She can't grab until after I slay you in combat.
Yeah. Oh, well, speaking of, you know, daughters growing up, coming of age, and cool-ass dads, today we are talking about Bill and Ted Facing the Music, and we're going to take a call from the Who Shot line, and of course, we have some staff picks, but first, it's time for our new segment, Itadick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? And each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? First up and foremost, we of course have to start this off by talking about some tragic news. We lost Chadwick Boseman between pods this last week. He died at the age of 42 to colon cancer, and he's portrayed Jackie Robinson in 42, James Brown on Get On Up, Thurgood Marshall in Marshall, but he was most remembered for his role as King T'Challa as the Black Panther. Now, great movie, and really highlighted to me just how many African-American heroes he's portrayed. Like, he helped the market on that, like, you know, like the same way Shamar Moore is always like no good light-skinned dude, he was that for he was that for Black leader. So I mean, this is the easiest of this question ever, but is this important? Do you care?
First off, I think he was 43.
No, he was 42. A lot of headlines erroneously said 43. He would have turned 43 in November. He died at the age of 42 after playing Jackie Robinson, who was number 42,
on
this year's MLB Jackie Robinson Day and the birthday of Jack Kirby. So it was like a confluence of stuff going on there.
Yeah.
But yes, it is important that I care. I mean, look, partially, like, my father died of colon cancer. I started having colonoscopies at the age of 35. If you haven't, talk to your doctor about it. These are important. You know, they can save your life. They have literally saved the lives of friends of mine. On a cinematic basis, obviously, this is a huge, huge blow. He was an extraordinary actor, very much an up-and-coming icon of cinema. I mean, he'd done stuff before this, but I remember seeing back-to-back Jackie Robinson and James Brown, just like, this guy is amazing and can do anything, and proceeded to keep doing all kinds of fascinating things. And, you know, I'll let you guys talk about the ongoing impact of Black Panther, but obviously that was a hugely important movie, not just for genre film, but for Black film, for Black representation, for Black futurism, for so much other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. On the lead up side of things, I think this has been notable. It was such a shocking revelation. I was on a group Zoom and literally got like a pop-up email notice, and all of us went into shock, because one of the things that's been so noteworthy or newsworthy beyond just his accomplishments as an actor is the hidden nature of his diagnosis and what he was going through. And we won't ever know and shouldn't ever know, because he clearly valued his privacy to a great extent. But the fact that he went to such pains to hide it and continue working through it and not share it, I only hope that that was born of a positive protective instinct in him and not negatively driven by fear of repercussion or anything else, because it's a daunting thing, and I hope he got everything he wanted from the privacy he held on to the end.
Yeah, very much agreed. I mean, Iffy and I could talk about this for days, but
yeah,
you know, Iffy, you know what? I mean, you sort of have that dual background, like you're African dad and like African American mom. So like, I'm sure it hits you on a different level than it hits me. But like yeah, I mean, he was like, for me, like when Black Panther came out, I was like, oh my god, this is what it felt like for white dudes to watch Superman. Like, this is what it feels like, and this is the feeling. Like, I want this all day, every day. Like, I distinctly remember, like, I remember when I got my job writing for She-Hulk, like we were at the Disney lot like everyone else for MCU, and like I remember like having this really tiny little silly fanboy thing in the back of my mind where like I'm gonna walk into the offices and I'm gonna get on the elevator, I'm gonna see Chadwick and Ryan Coogler, and I'm gonna just dap them up and say, thank you guys so much for doing it for the culture, and like that's it, we're just gonna say thanks brother, get off the elevator and go to my job. And like that's what I walked into the offices every day, like sort of carrying that feeling. So like, you know, you would say, like, you know, you talked about like the idea of keeping it, you know, close to the chest, which like he did it for his own reasons. But like, like that was also one of the biggest things that hit me, is that like, you know, I'm just scrolling through Twitter and like someone, I see this, like the picture of Chadwick. I was like, this seems like is this like some weird prank? Did someone hack his Twitter? Like, it's because it came completely out of nowhere. Like, you would have thought that, like, you know, you're around those offices, you hear things about every production, about every movie and every TV show. Like, you thought something like as big as that would have been like trickled down at least to like, you know, Feige or whatever. But like the fact that no one knew, even like, you know, Coogler, who I considered like be a pretty close friend with him, didn't know, like that's what like really hit me the most. Like, it was completely unexpected.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of why this hit me harder than I expected. Ever, because you know there's been a lot of celebrity deaths, and I really thought, I was like, oh man, when Stan Lee goes, it's gonna fuck me up, and it really didn't. But this one, I was like drunk and dizzy, and I think it's because, like, you know, especially working in the industry, kind of like Cody was saying, there's always this like idea that was like, oh man, I'm gonna catch up to you and I'm gonna see you there, and I'm gonna hit you. And I think also what really, it just highlights the way a lot of Black people will hide what they're going through so that they can keep pushing forward. Mm-hmm. Like this, like everyone's like, oh, this is wild, this is great. And it was like, but that's actually very common in Black culture. They're so aware of you worrying about them that they won't tell you. And so like that is what really made it hit, is just like, it's not even like he was trying to be strong. He was just like, I don't want y'all to worry about me. I want to do my thing. And if these are my last days, I want to do it doing what I love. And that alone is what's really admirable, of just like, and kind of, you know, there's been conversations coming up about how, you know, people will perceive you in a way and might not hire you if they knew you're going through all this. So yeah, no, I think it's very important. A lot of discussions are opening up that are important.
I do think if you haven't revisited Chadwick Boseman's work, now is a great time. The range is incredible. The idea that the same man convincingly and beautifully played James Brown and Thurgood Marshall is already insane. But so
I caught some of Get On Up the other night on cable, and it just, I forgot that Nelson Ellis is so great in that movie, and he too died young.
I loved Nelson Ellis. Yeah,
that movie's just like a double tragedy now, but they're both so great in it, and it's a wonderful legacy to two brilliant actors who were taken from us too soon.
Yes. Yeah. Well, speaking of a brilliant actor who is still here, that's not an iffy worthy transition, but I do what I can.
It'll do.
Thanks. Now that the new Star Wars trilogy has come to an end, John Boyega has some thoughts on the whole thing. Boyega, who played the character of Finn, spoke to GQ about his dissatisfaction with the way that Disney minimized characters of color. Quote, like, you guys knew what to do with Daisy Ridley. You knew what to do with Adam Driver. You knew what to do with these other people. But when it came to Kelly Marie Tran, when it came to John Boyega, you knew fuck all. So what do you want me to say? What they want you to say is, I enjoyed being a part of it. It was a great experience. Nah, I'll take that deal when it's a great experience. They gave all the nuance to Adam Driver, all the nuance to Daisy Ridley. Is this important, gang? Do you care?
Yeah, baby. I love post-Star Wars Boyega. He's so
yeah, he's got his chest Boyega out.
So
shirt
much.
Off, chest the out. He's out here.
Gone.
Yeah. I can't get enough of it, baby. Yeah. I can't get enough. Oh, my gosh.
He's
yeah.
also... Oh, sorry. Speaking of the idea of someone well-liked being a great vessel for an important message, John Boyega, to me, obviously, I'm alone in this because he's been hassled plenty, but I'm like, he's just infinitely likable. He's this crazy, charismatic, incredibly talented guy who's young and has so much ahead of him, has already done so much. And I really appreciate the platform that he's on and his like 360 perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah.
The idea of attacking someone, you know, a lot of this is so loaded with the criticisms that he should be grateful for what he had without also being able to criticize it. Those two things can exist in the same space. And I think that he is aware of that, and that's how he presents it.
Yeah. You were definitely sold a bill of goods that we were not cashed out on in the way that we thought we were good going to. Like, I distinctly remember watching The Force Awakens at the Vista on like a 35mm print with my friend Kyle Drew, another black guy. We went to film school together. And like, as soon as we saw John Boyega take the hat off and he's having that panic attack, we're like, this is our new dude. We're following this guy. He's our Luke Skywalker. And at the end, where he's in the forest and he's facing off against Adam Driver, and like, he just pops that lightsaber and it looks so good, like that blue against his dark skin and that background. You're like, yes, this is what we wanted as kids. Like, when I was eight, like, I loved, you know, Luke, but I wanted to see Billy Dee Williams with a lightsaber. Like, that's what I wanted. And like, so we go into like the series, and like, I personally really enjoyed The Last Jedi. Like, I think that Rian Johnson did some really interesting things. For me, it has my favorite shot in any Star Wars movie. Like, the hyperdrive jump is like just a beautiful cinematic fare. I love it. I love the introduction of Kelly Marie Tran's character. But like, you know, I did have some like thoughts about it where like, you know, it felt like, you know, we were sort of building up to having John Boyega being this like sort of like second Jedi. But like, you know, he spends the entire movie on like, you know, a wild bantha chase, I guess, as they said in the prequels. But like, you were sort of like, oh man, we wanted to see this guy, like, we wanted our Luke Skywalker, but he became like this, you know, sort of a sidekick comedy character, which is fine. Like, I love comedy, and like, Kelly Marie Tran has him had some really fun chemistry. But like, we did want to see like a black, you know, black Jedi that's not, you know, Samuel L. Jackson. Like, we were wanted that, like, something for us.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so very clear that they started off building something for John Boyega and abandoned it. It's so clear because just the weight that they put on his character, even the shots of his character. So I think I'm sure, you know, just knowing how it is being, you know, just an actor and talking with, you know, the people involved, they probably were telling them like, okay, we're really building up something. We got this, and this is what we have in plan. So there's probably stuff that he knows, the changes that he knows that he can't openly talk about on the creative side. So he's just know. And usually that's what's happening. Anytime anyone in the industry is talking about it, you're only getting like just as much as they can say and know they can defend themselves. I felt the same way. It really, and that's kind of why I kind of got disinterested. Like, I still haven't seen the third one because I was like, they kind of just really, you could feel like in the second one, I felt them shelf it, and really, it was real, real, almost kind of weird how they just dived into the Reylo stuff. Like, they really like just went, like, you felt it in the second movie that they scrapped everything. You had this like wonderful gallery of characters, and you just see like, Oscar Isaac kind of taking a back seat into being like a mansplainer, which, you know, that moment I like thought was cool, but it kind of just seemed like, instead of letting it be a big moment, and let us not forget that Captain Phasma, they had a million toys of Captain Phasma, and how much do we actually see? Like, like this huge beef between Boyega and Phasma was building, and they're like, oh, we'll just make it like a little battle inside.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I will say Attack the Block is better than almost every Star Wars movie.
Oh.
100%.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah,
I do love Attack the Block.
That's all I got in this. Oh. I would say it is important that I don't care, but it's important because everybody in the world talks about fucking Star Wars, and I'm glad the Boyega is calling them out. Speaking of call-outs, the co-creator of The New Mutants is not in love with the new movie that has finally come out after being in production hell for years. It was originally intended to come out in April 2018, but there were reshoots and cancellations and the Disney-Fox merger and a pandemic and so many other issues that finally led to the movie coming out this last week. And now that it's out, New Mutants co-creator Bob McLeod has one final thing to say about it. He recently took to his Facebook to outline some of his problems with the film. He took issue with the fact that it was a horror movie and that they whitewashed one of the characters, but he was also peeved, and oh man, do I feel you on this one, that they spelled his name wrong in the credits. His last name is spelled McLeod, and in the credits, they spelled it Macleod. Quoth Mr. McLeod, they couldn't even be bothered to check the spelling of my name sometime in the last 3 years. And that can't be fixed. That will be on the movie forever. I think I'm done with this movie. If you must, you can see New Mutants in select theaters now. Is this important? Do you care?
So rude. Just so rude. You know how many, as someone who's had to do that, you know how many eyes go on those credits? So many eyes.
It's not like this got rushed into theaters either.
No, they've been pushing it for months. It's tied in with several things. Oh, true. Years that they shot in like 2017. Mm-hmm. That it's tied into such a weird disrespect all throughout. One of the other things he alludes to is the idea of the whitewashing. And of course, when you're casting or you're styling and you're deciding what the movie version is going to look like, there's always those things like you get your storms that look questionable or you get whatever. But in this, apparently one of the characters from the graphic novel is Brazilian and is a dark skinned Brazilian man. Mm. And the casting of it, they cast a non-black Brazilian actor, and there's just things like that of, you know, I think comics and graphic novels have been paving the way for so long in terms of a range of representation and diversity, and to have them make all those inroads in their art form and then to have the movies be like, cool that you did that, we're gonna take it back.
I mean, I just wanted to kind of zero in on that because there's even more weight to it, because the character was also built to speak on the racism between Brazilians in there, and his response was, oh, you know, I just, you know, wanted the best Brazilian actor, which that's a phrase I hate, because there's only one white who has used it in a way that has not been angering to me, and that is Ari Aster, when people were mad about The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, and he was like, why'd you make it a black family? He was like, oh, I just chose the best actors for the job. And I was like, that's the only time I want to hear it.
As you know, someone who has worked for Marvel and will hope to work for Marvel in the future, you know, I'll take the middle road. But I will say, like, whitewashing in 2020 is so bummed. It's so annoying, and just like, it's just such an easy thing. Like, you're not going to do, I mean, everyone knows you're not going to do a deep dive into race on a superhero movie unless it's like, you know, Watchmen. So like, you can just have like the safest, easiest take on race. It's fine. But he whitewashed two characters in this movie. Like, they were supposed to be two Afro-Latino characters in this movie, Latinx characters in this movie, and he whitewashed them both, and like two of like one, I'm like, all right, that's whack, but like, you can't get, you tell me you can't find at least one black actress that can be a doctor, like, in 2020, really? Like, come on! Like, it's just not worth
it. It was 2017.
Yes, right. 3 years later, right? 2017. Things were different back then. So, you know, they're all booked. Yeah,
the black actresses they were all playing therapists at that time.
Yeah, they're all playing therapists. They needed some extras for us. I get it.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Bill and Ted Face the Music. Just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hey, Keith.
Hey, Helen. Hey, you've got another true-false quiz for me?
Yep. Our trivia podcast, Go Fact Yourself, used to be in front of a live audience.
True. Turns out that's not so safe anymore.
Correct. Next. Unfortunately, this means we can no longer record the show.
False. The show still comes out every first and third Friday of the month.
Correct. fact. Finally, we still have great celebrity guests answering trivia about things they love on every episode of Go Fact Yourself.
Definitely true.
And for bonus points, name some of them.
Recently, we've had Ophira Eisenberg, plus tons of surprise experts like Yardley Smith and Suzanne Summers.
Perfect score. Woo-hoo. You can hear Go Fact Yourself every first and third Friday of the month with all the great guests and trivia that we've always had. And if you don't listen, well, then you can go fact yourself.
That's the name of our podcast.
Correct. Woo!
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Whiteyway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Cody Ziegler.
Alonzo Duralde.
And today we're talking about Bill and Ted Face the Music. Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
Sure, why not? About 25 years have passed since the last Bill and Ted movie, and that's how long has passed for Bill and Ted as well. It has been prophesied, of course, in the previous films that they would compose the song that would bring together time and space and matter and reality. But we get to 2019, 2020, and they still haven't written it. And they have tried really desperately to fulfill their destiny by writing it, and it just is not taking off. In the meantime, they have married their princesses and have two daughters who seem to be rather Bill and Ted-like, who are played by Samara Weaving and Bridget Lundy Payne. But now they've got a ticking clock because the daughter of Rufus, the character played by the late George Carlin, arrives to tell them that they have to deliver that song by 7:17 this evening, or the entire fabric of space-time will unravel. They decide to jump ahead in time and borrow the song from their future selves while their daughters go back in time to get history's greatest musicians to help them compose this literally life-saving piece of music.
Also, shout out to our friend Erin Hayes, who did our Clueless episode with us, and she played Ted's wife.
Yes.
One of the princesses, the dark-haired princess.
Yes, she and Jayma Mays.
Wonderful as ever.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Good time. Oh yeah, this was fun because I barreled through all three movies in a weekend because I've
seen any of them.
Yeah, I'm going through the journey, and wow. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Two, I think was the one that made me chuckle the most because it just goes full goofy. besides like one bit, it holds up pretty well. You know.
It does drop. I rewatched the second one in the last 5 years, and like my biggest takeaway was, oh, there's definitely an F-bomb in this.
Yep, that's the bit.
I don't mean the
F-bomb. And they do
F-U-bomb.
It twice, because they do it in the first one, and it's a callback in the second one. So I was like, I wonder if they're going to do like they're gonna do a thing where they try and address it in the third one, and they didn't. And I was like, okay.
Which is probably a good call.
I think there's no way to...
I thought the least they could have done was hire Pansy Division to come in and perform their song Bill and Ted's Homosexual Adventure in this third one, but they did not, alas.
The treat. They did almost everything else. So I had a different... I watched these when they came out. Like, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was my bridge to puberty, and I set my puberty sights on Keanu Reeves, and I have been unwavering ever since.
Good place to set those sights. He's a handsome man.
I got lucky with that one, yeah. But the... Right. So I watched... Watched them pretty, you know, sort of like middle school and then high school for Bogus Journey. And I remember super enjoying them. Watched the first one I've seen so many times, but haven't seen for years. Yeah. And I do remember one of the things I liked about them then and that I enjoyed about this iteration was these were like literally led by bros. It's bro movies 101. Yeah. And yet there's nothing lascivious about them. Mm-hmm. They're not like trying to use the time machine to sneak into girls' locker rooms. You know,
yeah, there's no
like
panty raids.
Porky's Revenge of the Nerd sort of ickiness. Like,
they're holy fools.
Yeah, these doofuses are just sweet dum-dums. And you guys, I love a sweet dum-dum. I mean...
No, like, even in the second one, their wives are waiting to marriage to sleep together, and they just, like, they're like, oh, man, maybe we'll have sex when we get married. Yeah, they're totes chaste.
I don't remember. I only remember flashes of these movies because I saw them when I was so young. Like, I remember the telephone booth. I remember like them going to hell, and like I remember thinking it was very funny that hell was like kind of chill. Like I remember Jeff being like a pretty fun guy, and like there's like the weird like two twin things that like God sends to hang out with them, and they smash into each other outside of the
station.
Yeah, I remember being the movie being like so like deeply alienating to as a kid, like not understanding what was going on but still enjoying it. And like off your point of it being fun and nice, like what I love so much about Face the Music is that like everyone is nice, no one's being an asshole to one another. Like Bill and Ted genuinely love each other and their friends, and like even their future selves are like they're like cartoonishly villainous, but like they're not like out to like destroy the world. And like even like I mean we'll get to it later on, but like that robot was my favorite character in the entire movie. Like I loved how sad he was about like having to kill people. Like it's
good. that is a friend of the pod and me, Anthony Carrigan, aka NoHo Hank. I know because we a while ago we had lunch, and he originally auditioned for Death. And so because they were still working that out. And then eventually when they got the original Death to sign on, which by
William
the way,
William Sadler.
Watching the early ones, I was like, oh, I could see why Anthony would be so good as Death. Yeah. Watching like his NoHo Hank style, I was like, oh, but then like as the robot, oh my God, it was like, it was so, like when he just... towards the end when he gets so like self-conscious.
That's the kind of thing, it entirely hinges on his performance. If you looked at just the script, if we did a read of that, 99% of even comedic actors taking a pass at Dennis Caleb McCoy could not make that funny. Literally, some of his funniest lines are just him saying his name.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah. His sense of timing is exquisite. So I'm the old fart of the group. These movies came out after I graduated from college. So I saw the first one. I was kind of like, okay, whatever. Yeah. And then I really liked the second one. I thought I loved the absurdism of it. I thought William Sadler was brilliant. I to this day, you can always make me laugh by citing a charades game that ends in Smokey and the Bandit 3. Smokey is the Bandit. But, you know, like I never rewatched them. I didn't even rewatch them to get ready for this. But like, they didn't, you know, mean a whole lot to my life. And so this movie for me was kind of like, it reminded me of when I was a kid in the 70s and they started realizing that you could get big TV ratings by doing these TV movies where you would reunite the cast of old sitcoms, you know, like Still the Beaver, you know, or Father Still Knows Best, whatever. And those movies were super innocuous, but it was like, it was cute. It was nice. Like, oh, look at them all grown up. Look at them. Oh, yeah, you know, that's so nice. Like, and that's pretty much the vibe I got from this one. I didn't laugh a lot. I laughed some. And it was just mostly nice. It was nice to see everybody. You know, I feel like they left a big opportunity on the table with the daughters. Yeah. I think you've got these two actors who are super talented, like Samara Weaving. If you have not seen Ready or Not yet, she will blow you away.
Yeah, she's great. You know? Very charismatic.
Yeah, Bridget Lundy Payne is awesome. I don't feel like anything got written for them. Like they didn't.
It felt almost like two different movies. Like there was like a draft where it was like, let's have like the daughters take over and like let's follow their movie. And then it was like the original draft was like, let's just have Bill and Ted.
We'll put them in too. Yeah. It was kind of like you watch Bill and Ted, and for all of the other stuff that may or may not work, you have a very clear picture of who these characters are and the kind of idiots they are. And you don't really come away with that with these two. It's like, well, they know a lot about music. They're also sort of slackery, I guess, because they're still living at home in their 20s. But like, they don't pop in the way that I know these two performers could have if they'd had the material to work with. Mm. Or if the movie, you know, was edited in a way to kind of give you an insight as to who they were. Like, if the idea is let's spin off and make the next movies about them, that's only going to work if we know who they are, and I don't.
Mm. I actually responded to, I completely agree with you. I think that the actresses were fantastic, and I really liked the strange energy. They have parallels.
Sorry, Bridget Lundy Payne is technically NB. So you want to say actors.
Oh, thank you. So I really appreciated what they were bringing to the table. I like how they were styled. Bridget had on this like, hideous sort of form-fitting blue shirt. It's the most ugly thing, and I love that they were wearing it. And so But one of the things I appreciated was, I know how long that the original writers were developing this script, and that it was very important to them. They could have gotten the funding, and this is not a big budget. For Keanu Reeves in 2020 to be in a $25 million film is bonkers. Like, bonkers. But them, they could have made this so much bigger had they made it about the daughters, had they focused it. And I think for them, they course corrected a little too far in standing firm to what I liked, which was, no, this is a Bill and Ted story. Because, you know, when I remember when the trailer first came out, I was worried that, oh, are they just going to hand a baton off to the daughters and then they're just going to run with it? And instead, we got a full Bill and Ted. But probably in doing that, they did put a little all of their eggs in that basket in solidarity, and the daughters could have used a few more eggs.
That's what I felt too. I originally went into this thinking that it was we were gonna be following the daughters and they would be, you know, taking the mantle over, and it kind of was Bill and Ted, you know, the movie, you know, and the daughter.
It's right there in the title movie. To be fair.
It is. That is true. You know, I will say, you know, they still stole my heart. I will be making a Bridget Lundy Payne fan cam. I will, you know, be following them along their long career. I will start watching that show Atypical because of them. I've looked it up. I've logged in. I'm locked in. And they just turned 26 August
10th. It's not creepy. It's not so
Not at all.
It's only a little bit creepy instead of a lot of creepy.
Yes. It's definitely still a little creepy.
I definitely do not follow the Dane Cook stature, the Zach Braff stature. You have to be over 25 to date me.
I thought the movie I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was pretty funny. Almost a meta thing to it where it felt like I was watching like a late 80s, early 90s movie, and like all those conventions of like there's going to be a rock concert at the end to save the town hall, and like everyone got to get the band together, and like that's a very specific type of movie from a very specific era of filmmaking that I have not seen captured since then. Like, you know, it's very, I think we can all agree that it's very popular now to be like, we're going to make an 80s retro movie, we're going to have neon lasers and the synth soundtrack, but they can never actually capture the feel of that filmmaking. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it was a very low budget movie, but most of the stuff in it was like actually practical, which reminded me of those movies. Like the big robot seat looks dumb and goofy, and like it just lights up when you shoot it, and that made me feel like I was watching like the original one. Like when they go to the prison scene and like they had those terrible muscular suits. Magnifique. I was like, that's so what I want.
Captain America costume.
That's what makes these movies so fun. Is that like, I mean, this is sort of an inside baseball improv thing, but it felt like, you know, when you do improv, like the idea is that like each scene is heightened in a very specific way, and like this seemed like the perfect heightening. Like they met like their scumbag bar day karaoke versions. They met like their fake grifter rock star 80s like English rock star version, and then like they met their prison metal beatdown versions. And I was like, that honestly, I could watch 5 hours of that, of them just meeting different scummy versions of themselves.
Oh my gosh. But I do like, you could tell there was effort put into, and this is, you know, on the counter to the New Mutants of it all, I do notice as a person of color, like when they go into effort of being like, okay, let's make the drummer they find a black female. Let's make the flutist,
That's Beyonce's drummer, just for the record.
Oh, really?
She's drummed. She's drummed for Beyonce, for Lenny Kravitz.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Yeah.
And so, they made Ling Len, who's this very, it's like founded music in China and is a historical but not well-known character, and straight up gender flipped and acknowledged that. Dope. Like, oh, Ling Len's a woman. Great. Let's grab her. Let's put her in this machine.
You love to see it. And that's all it takes. You know, that's honestly, really,
that's all you need. If Star Wars wanted to make, if Disney wanted to make $1 billion right now, take a random black actress and put a lightsaber in her hand, and people will give them billions of dollars. She didn't have to say anything. She didn't have to move. Her blocking could be sitting in a chair for an hour and a half, and I would give them money to see that.
Yeah.
Well, and this is a whole other conversation for another day. But again, it's that thing always of, you know, Black Panther is the second highest grossing MCU movie, was the highest grossing movie the year it came out. Where are the lineup of wannabe knockoffs, you know?
Yeah.
Every time a movie aimed at Black people or women or queer people is a big hit, it is always an anomaly, it's always an outlier, and it never spawns the number of copies that a similar movie that about white dudes that hits the jackpot always spawns. End of soapbox.
Solid soapbox.
So, for our final review of Bill and Ted Face the Music, would you screen it? Stream it or skip it?
Okay, no, Cody. I'm just kidding. Cody, please go first.
Go ahead, Dre.
No,
we love your energy.
Okay, you guys, I just want to say that I'm going to screen it. The vibrant pleasantness of this movie was cathartic and a balm for me. And just the idea of watching something that had enough nostalgia, but I didn't revisit the other. I wasn't lost. The overwhelming pleasantness. Maybe it's that I want so little at this point, but man, they delivered with exactly what I wanted.
100% same thing. I'm screening it. Like I mean, maybe it's because we've been living in a hellscape for the past 4 years, but like the idea of like people being nice and pleasant and like generally loving each other and like the conflict being that you don't know how to have conflict. Like I love that. Like I just want that. And like, I want to watch, I'm actually literally going to rewatch the first two movies tonight after watching Face the Music, because I forgot how enjoyable like those two characters are.
I'm going to say stream really for the same reasons that you guys are. This movie is pleasant and it is nice. But that's kind of it. And I.
Mine was a caps locked pleasant, and yours is more of a lowercase italicized.
So. Totally italicized, yes. Yeah. No serifs whatsoever. Not even on the T. It's just like, it's fine. It's nice. It's amusing. It's sweet. It's kind of negligible, but you know.
All right. And me, you know, I love it. And you know, because I'm an esteemed film journalist with this podcast, I watch all my movies sober, so I can't wait to get super high and rewatch all three of these movies. I watch them all because I want to give the general go. If there's like a Harold and Kumar we end up doing when they eventually try and reboot that, I will do I will watch it sober still and then do another watching high to give both takes.
Oh, nice. But
because I'm dedicated my craft.
Yeah. That's what they call it. Yeah.
All right. I have to sharpen my katana, but we'll be right back after you hear from another show on Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. Ah, high school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95, we did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both. So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Cody Ziegler,
Drea Clark.
And now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, why don't you play that call?
Hi, Ify and Drea and Alonzo. My name is Ryan. My oldest, my little girl, is just about old enough to see Star Wars. And I, as a nerd dad, am having so much trouble deciding how to present the actual films to her now that she's old enough. Should I do it in release order or sequel number order? Should I completely skip the prequels? What do you guys think? Thanks,
Ryan.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ryan.
I love this is interesting. Dads being concerned with this kind of thing. That's not sarcastic. I genuinely love that.
I know. Yeah, there was an energy to the call as if, like, you know,
he had the DVD like in his hand right now.
Yeah. He's like, ah, damn, I got to call.
Truly, like, he was calling Poison Control. And we were going to, like, feed in.
When I was a kid, we had to learn about Star Wars in the streets.
I also appreciate this. I am a proud godmother to my goddaughter, whom I call George. And when she was younger, you know, one of the things of being a godparent is this idea of helping with their spirituality and looking at this. And we are not a religious people. And so for me, honestly, Star Wars was a great shorthand for a lot of that. And George loved them and watched them all and has now become a movie fan in many different realms. But Star Wars is a great, it's the basic fable, right? It's light and dark. There's good guys and bad guys. And then there's some complications and there's learning about loss and learning about whatever. Anyway, so I do think it's a fun thing. And I also, you know, this particular franchise holds different weight for people. Alonso, I'm looking at you. But there's something really special about young memories tied to movies and what they can bring back later. I've mentioned before, like, my family watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy over Christmases. And so whether or not I want to, like, revisit all 143 hours of those three movies, when I see even a bit of them, like, there's such a nice little, time travel portal to this familial, happy warmness. So I think above and beyond just the story, building memories with your kids around specific movies, especially if they're movies that are franchised, that there's a bunch of them that you can continue to share and use as, like, teachable moments is very cool.
Well, I think if he will back me up on this, you clearly start with the Star Wars holiday special.
Yeah, she's going to love those Ewoks. She's going to just love them to death. Yeah,
No. If he, the holiday.
Which one is that one?
The holiday special, the Life Day, like the insane TV special.
The Wookiees. The Wookiees are so great.
Yeah. B. Arthur and Harvey Korman. Come on.
I thought there was Ewoks in there, and I was wrong. Also, just so you know, the full thing is on YouTube if you did want to start with it.
Oh, absolutely. George Lucas keeps trying to erase it, but he'll never get them all.
If you find it, watch it. Yeah, I'm not like the hugest, like, Star Wars guy, if you've been listening to this whole episode. But my personal pick, if I was going to do it or sit Naomi down through it, would be from the first one, because I think it just, since they are trying to tell a canonical story from start to finish, that just seems less confusing, even though everyone has, like, oh, you or this and all this
trade route.
It's like they're trying to tell a story throughout, so just watch it first. And also, kids, like, as much as people dump on the prequels, kids who grew up when the prequels came out love them. So, like, and I think they were created with that in mind. I mean, you know, don't let a Star Wars fan know this, but these are kids' movies.
That were, 100%. You know,
they were made with kids in mind. It's kind of the same thing when people got mad at Teen Titans Go because it wasn't that dark Teen Titans, you know, that they grew up with. And it was like, yeah, but the kids that are the age group that it's targeting love it. So you can't be mad at that.
Yeah, I'm of the same way. If he makes a really good point about, you know, these are stories for kids, like, that's not said in, like, a condescending way, but, like, the whole thought process that, at least from what I've been told from people that have worked on Star Wars stuff, is that you know, these, George Lucas views these things as myths. And, like, one of the main ways that myths were propagated is that, like, they were told to kids and instill an idea or a theme, or to basically boil down very complex ideas into, like, what you can take away with, like, what we learned in this episode. And, like, that's sort of, like, what Star Wars is that, yes, you learn about life and death and reincarnation and, like, the idea of good and bad and all that stuff. And I think, you know, if you're, like, an 8-year-old kid, you don't give a shit about whether you're watching episode 1 or episode 5. Like, just watch them all the way through. You'll see a growth. You'll have funny characters. Like, yeah, I hate Jar Jar Binks, but if I was 7, I probably think he was the funniest thing on the planet. So, like, you know, I was like, yeah, like, those are things that, like, you know, kids will respond to. And, like, if I end up having a kid, like, and I make them watch Star Wars, yeah, also, it's just easier. Like, I got to go from 4 to 9 and then go back to 3. Like, just watch all of them. I'm just trying to have some peace of mind for an hour and a half. Go watch these movies, kid.
But great question, and I hope this helps.
Yeah, I know. I hope this helps, and I hope you're not mad at us. Thank you, everyone who has called in. Please continue to do so. Our well is drying up, so make it your quarantine activity. The number for the Who Shout line is WSY-803-1664. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all.
The day that this comes out, September 4th, a film is premiering on FX and will also be on Hulu, called The Killing of Breonna Taylor. And it's directed by Yoruba Ryken, who's one of my favorite documentarians. We premiered her film in 2013 at LA Film Fest called The New Black, which I also recommend, where she explored basically how the gay rights movement interacted with Black culture and Black families. And I think Yoruba has a very incisive and thoughtful eye. And for this documentary on Breonna Taylor, which was produced by the New York Times, she also has the involvement and cooperation of Breonna's family. And it's a very personal look at this woman and the larger context. And I think, keeping an eye out for it and supporting it would be great.
So I want to plug a thing on TCM. I know a lot of people have cut the cord, but for those of you hardy souls out there who still have cable, they have a 14-week series called Women Make Film that is running through September, October, November. It is going to, by the end of it, cover 100 films and 100 filmmakers spanning six continents, 44 countries, and 12 decades. So this is women behind the camera going all the way back to, like, you know, Alice Guy Blaschet and all the way up to, you know, Sofia Coppola. They are running a ton of films directed by women, documentaries, features, shorts, in, you know, a multitude of languages from a multitude of corners of the earth. It's a really, and it all goes with a multi-part documentary, but they're also showing a ton of movies, including the women who are featured in the documentary. So it's just like this amazing crash course in really great films. Probably filmmakers you maybe never heard of, films you've never maybe even heard of, films that probably wouldn't show up on TCM necessarily. But, you know, it's just, it's a staggering array of stuff. And so if you have TCM, if you have access to TCM, or to the Watch TCM app, you really check this out. I'm just floored by how much they're doing, how much real estate they're giving to this idea, and how many movies they're making available to people to see.
It's so comprehensive.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Hear, Alonso.
Hear.
Thank you.
Yeah, great pick. Much better than mine.
Yes. Cody, you better give us something on a Space Jam
we
level.
We gave you extra time. Boy. What do you got?
Oh, boy. Yeah. So this is a documentary that I watched day.
Yes, like, documentary
ago.
Day. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a very lighthearted. I've been in a very lighthearted mood for the past couple of weeks. I've just been liking ingesting fun, irreverent things. It was Class Action Park. It's about documentary about the action. I think it's called Action Park in New Jersey, yeah. Notoriously dangerous park where, like, they would just make rides with out of, like, PVC pipes. People got injured left and right. But, like, what's fun about it is that, one, the guy that created the park is just a complete wacko. But they also, most of the interviews are from, like, comedians or funny adjacent people. So it's nice, like, just having them sort of recount this park and, like, all the crazy ways that they would, like, or all the wild ways that they would, you know, sort of, like, put people's lives in danger. Like, it was a water park, so, like, there was a ride where they had, like, fans underwater that would push people, and, like, one of the fans became dismantled, and, like, it shocked a guy. It was
electrocuted them to death.
Oh, yeah, to death. Yeah, that's not a funny part, but the other parts that are funny, yeah.
It's also inadvertently an amazing documentary on New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's the most New Jersey thing I've ever seen.
There's a lot of good Northeast American people in that movie. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah. For mine, you know, I'm going to break up the documentary trend that's going, most specifically because on this day of recording, September 2nd, it is one Keanu Reeves' birthday. So I have to make my choice a Keanu Reeves movie. Now, I was going to, you know, the easy ones would obviously be the John Wick franchise, or maybe
Point Break, because this is a period of Keanu's career where he was just surfer guy.
Yeah. Like young, that was dumb, his, and that, full that, of cum?
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes. That was his good. But I do want to go, you know, because I like to highlight often forgotten black cinema, even if, huh?
That's at the mailbox.
No, bro, you, come on. I'm gonna keep saying it. I'm gonna let you cut you off. The often forgotten black cinema that, while it may not have been as well received by critics, we grew up on, me and Cody. Something that brought, you know, young, upcoming R&B star with the hit, Strike One, caught you by surprise. Strike Two, right before your eyes. Strike Three, ooh, I struck you out. I struck you out. Hardball, featuring Keanu Reeves. Oh. It was the Black Bad News Bears.
Is Gene Hackman in that, or is that the Replacements?
No, that's The Replacements.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've not seen Hardball.
Michael B. Jordan. It has a young Michael B. Jordan. I seem to recall
that being one of the movies that came out around 9/11. Am I wrong? I think about 9/11 when I think of that movie.
I don't think. Yeah, it came out the day before 9/11.
There we go.
This September 10th, 2001.
Oh boy, this was definitely like a substitute teacher movie they had put on in high school.
This reminds me of a story that Matt Apodaca told me before, that he was getting his car changed once. He was getting his, like, he was at the mechanic, and he was sitting in the mechanic's office. And in the office was the mechanic with this huge fish. Like, it was like a gigantic, you know, those fish guy photos. Huge, really proud. But the date on it was September 10th, 2001. And that was like, you know, he wanted to talk about that fish so bad. No. But he couldn't talk about that fish.
By the way, now we're derailing and Casey's going to get rid of this, but I definitely saw a photo that someone took at a bowling alley once of this guy. You know, like if you get a perfect, like every strike, like whatever. Yeah. But it was from 9/11/2001. He was just like in the bowling alley and was like, oh, this dude had the best game of his life.
Yeah, he had the best game and everyone, no one was there. He's like, where'd everybody go?
What an unexpected detour.
Yeah. Oh, but Hardball, check it out. You might not like it. I'm not saying it's the best movie. I'm saying it's a movie that I grew up on and thought was real cool for a second. Well, goodness gracious.
And on that note.
On that note, it's time for our 5-star reviews. This one comes from XCXCXVXV, not my name, LOL. Thank you so much for doing an episode on Clueless. I needed it, and I totally forgot it came out 25 years ago. Oh my God. Keep up the good work, and thank you so much for telling me about weird apps and unknown movies that I would not have seen otherwise, like Hardball. Thank you so much for that amazing 5-star review, Cody, and thank you for joining us, my brother. Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, sure. Check out the Dark Weed Pod. Me and my homie Brody Reed are two black nerds. We talk about stuff that we love, like comic books and manga and video games. If he has done it, I'm sure he'll do it again now that he has a katana. If you want to see my dumb tweets and see me argue with Iffy online, check me out at Yay for Zig on Twitter and Instagram. And other than that, you know, that's where you can find me if you want to be found.
All right.
Thanks, Cody.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
thank you. Anytime. And if you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. And again, the number for the Who Shout line is WSY803-1664. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast. Or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.